school boys. Welcome, everyone. Good evening. Thank you very much for coming along to Kollel Menachem's grand presentation of Before Shavuos. We kindly ask that everyone please make sure their phones are on silent. And if you get an opportunity to please drop in some donation towards helping Kollel Menachem do all its wonderful things that it does, as mentioned in the flyer. And without further ado, I'm going to call on Rabbi Johnson to tell us why we really eat cheesecake on Shavuos.
I just made a comment to one of the participants in tonight's shiur. They asked whether we eat first before the shiur or eat afterwards. So I said, well, if you want the cheesecake to be more meaningful, then wait till after the shiur. But they were a little bit concerned there might not be any left. Anyway, Baruch Hashem, there's plenty of cheesecake. A big thank you to my wife for taking care of that and allowing us to enjoy the shtei shulchanos, both Gashmias and Ruchnius, because of course a Yitz Gashmius is Ruchnius. One of the most famous and enjoyable minhagim of culinary proportions is of course the eating of milchiks on Shavuos. This custom is brought by the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch, where he writes, Noihagin b'chol hamakoymos, in all places where Jewish people live, at least the Ramah writing for Ashkenazi Jewry, their minig is le'echol ma'achalei chalav b'yom rishon d'chag ha'shavuos, to eat milchik products on the first day of Shavuos. Now, this is one of these minhagim where we go all out. Cheesecake, blintzes, ice cream, quiches, knishes, so much so that every year the Rabbanim in the lead up to Shavuos and on Shavuos itself have to remind everyone that we still need to eat meat. It's a yom tov. And perhaps we have to remind our guests to save room for the meat. Minhagim represent the beauty and richness of Yiddishkeit. If we look back in our youth at the memories that we have, what stands out in our mind, and not necessarily the strictures of the Doraisas and the Derabanans, the clear set halachas of the Shulchan Aruch of how to fulfill the mitzvahs, but rather it's those minhagim which serve like the decoration on top of a cake that make the experience so much more pleasurable, so much more geschmack, so much more enjoyable. Now, this is, of course, not a shiur on the nature of minhagim. It's something which has been discussed at length in the past. But we're familiar with the famous statement, minig Yisrael Torahi, that a minig which is kept by the Jewish people is like Torah. And you know what? The Alter Rebbe brings that statement here in connection to the eating of milchiks on Shavuos. When we look for reasons for minhagim, there are many reasons why minhagim can evolve. And whilst minhagim may not have the force of a command coming from Hashem, either in the form of a deraisa or through the rabbinic writings midrabanan, nonetheless they take on that status of a Torah. It becomes binding on us, but not in a way that it's an oppression, not in the way that it's milmaila lamata, but rather it's a sincere expression of our desire to beautify Hashem's mitzvahs and to offer, so to speak, from ourselves something to enhance our experience of Yiddishkeit. When it comes to the minig of eating milchiks on Shavuos, the Alter Rebbe writes that there are harbe tamim, that there are many reasons why we have milchiks on Shavuos. In fact, anyone who's anyone has written a reason why we have milchiks on Shavuos. Some of them more obvious and some plain to see. Another is a little bit more of a stretch of the mind of the imagination, or perhaps some acrobatics in the workings of Chazal and the teachings of Torah. In some ways, minhagim are even greater than Torah itself. and we see the great Mesiras Nefesh throughout history, that great Tzaddikim and Talmidei Chachamim, and indeed simple Jewish people have had, not only giving up their lives for the sake of the mitzvahs of the Torah, but even to protect the minhagim which have become sanctified and embraced by the Jewish world. Any genuine minhag has a basis to it. There's some rhyme and reason. There's a method to the madness. There's a rationale, either an illusion or a representation. It cannot be baseless. A minhag, in fact, which is baseless, is questionable whether we call it a minhag at all. When we talk about a widespread minhag, such as eating milchiks on Shavuos, where we say har betamim, that there are many reasons for such a thing, on such a minhag we say yusadasim bahari kodesh, that they originate from the most lofty and holiest of places. So let's go through some of the classic explanations why we have milchiks on Shavuos, and perhaps lay the scene for the deeper explanation that I'd like to take you through tonight. The Rama himself, who's the source of the minhag for Ashkenazim to eat milchiks on Shavuos, writes as follows, and I guarantee you no one in this room actually does this. Why do we have milchiks on Shavuos? The Rama says very clearly that we have to have fleishiks on Shavuos. Shavuos is a yomtiv, simchas yomtiv, has a basis, midoy raisa. Nowadays meat is only a drabonon or a mitzvah. So the Rama says as follows, you come home from shul, you make kiddush, they don't have a big grand kiddush in the shuls like we do nowadays, you make kiddush, you wash, and then you have a milchik meal with hamotzi, with lechem, with bread. At the end of that meal, presumably you bench, and according to our custom, take a break of 1 hour between the milchiks and the fleishiks. You wash again a second time, and then have your fleishik meal. Does anyone do that? No. Oh, we do have someone that does that. Okay, there you go. Excellent. Well, that's what the Rama actually writes that you should do. Why do we do this? Every Yom Tov, there was a unique carbon that was brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And on Shavuos, the unique carbon, the Mincha Chadasha, the new offering that was brought in the Beis HaMikdash on Shavuos, was the Shtei HaLechem, two chametz tikka loaves which were brought on Shavuos in the Beis HaMikdash. So as a Zecher, just like at the Seder, we have an egg and a bone to remember the karbonus, so too, we have two challahs, the milchik challah and the fleishik challah, the milchik meal and the fleishik meal. Please ask your rabbi about baking milchik challahs and how you do that. And it's a zecher, reminds us of the two loaves that they brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's what the Rama tells us. The Bnei Yisaschar, famous Chassidic master, writes that we find an allusion that, of course, we know that Shavuos is Matan Torah. Shavuos celebrates the giving of the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. Zman Matan Torah Seinu. And he connects the idea of milchiks to the pasuk, or the words from the pasuk, Lahagid Baboiker Chastecha. And if we take those three words, to say in the morning your kindnesses, and chesed is often used as a description as the teachings of Torah, Lahagid begins with a lamed, Baboiker begins with a base, and Chastecha begins with a ches. And if we rearrange the letters a little bit, we have chalav. The Mishnah Brura brings perhaps the most famous of reasons is that at Matan Torah, the Jewish people went through a form of Geirus. They went through a form of conversion. They became Jewish. And in fact, we learn out the dinim of Geirus from Har Sinai, from Matan Torah. And until that time, the Jewish people had been able to eat basar nechira, meat that was not shechted, and therefore meat that was not kosher. And therefore, once they received the Torah and are now mitzuva va'oseh, they're now commanded and obligated in the mitzvahs, including the mitzvah of kashrus, well, how could they eat off their tray for kelim? And therefore, to avoid having to cook food, which generally was meat, they would have milchiks instead. And if one wants to look in Likutei Sichos, the Rebbe deals with this opinion and explains and pokes holes in its logic and explains why that ultimately is not the reason for the minhag of eating milchiks on Shavuos. Other remes, we know that Har Sinai has various names, one of which is Har Gavnunim, the mountain of cheese, which perhaps describes the amount of cheese that we eat over the Yom Tov. These are various reasons that you can see, and this is perhaps what the Alter Rebbe is telling us, that Har Betamim, there were many reasons for the custom of eating milchiks on Shavuos. But now, with your permission, I'd like to take us all a little bit deeper into understanding the nature of milk, what milk represents, and perhaps a deeper understanding of its connection to Shavuos and Matan Torah. In the book of Mishlei, in the 8th chapter, Shlomo HaMelech describes, he's speaking as though the Torah itself or herself is speaking. That the Torah is proclaiming and calling out to the Jewish people her virtues, her qualities, her milas, and urging the Jewish people to study her. And in the 30th verse, Mishlei says as follows, Vayhi etzloi amoin, ve'eyesh ha'ashuim yoim yoim, Mesacheches lefanav b'chol eis, Mesacheches betevel artsoi, v'sha'ashuai es b'nei Adam. And for those of us who are familiar with Maimarim of Chassidus, you think, wow, that's a Dibur HaMaschil of a Maimer. Well, it's not the Dibur HaMaschil of one Maimer, it's the Dibur HaMaschil of countless Maimarim describing the Yom Tov of Shavuos. What does the Pasuk mean? So it says as follows, the Torah again is talking, and the Torah says, then I was before him, referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Amon. And we'll leave that untranslated for the moment. And I was his delight, playing before him at all times. Playing in the habitable world of his earth, Tevel Artsoi, and having delights with the sons of men, V'shashuai es b'nei Adam. Chassidus explains this pasuk describing various levels in the journey of the Torah, descending from the level where the Torah existed within Hashem's very essence, that it was Hashem's delight, Hashem's pleasure, the way the Torah journeyed downwards into this world, Tevel Artsoi, until it comes into the environment of man to bring delight and pleasure and closeness to Hashem, to man himself. If we look at this progression, the most lofty of heights, the origination point, if you would, of the Torah, the way the Torah exists, Shashuei HaMelech Ba'atzmusoi, the way it is Hashem's pleasure within his very essence, what word does it use to describe it? Amoin. What does Amoin mean? So if we look at the commentaries on this pasuk, we find different explanations what it means. Vayi etzloi Amoin, that I was an Amoin. The Torah is saying I was an Amoin before him, before Hashem. One explanation is from the word umanus. Umanus is a craft or a trade. And the Torah is, so to speak, saying that I was the instrument of his craft, of Hashem's craft. When we refer to the Torah as the blueprint of creation, that this was the umanus, this was the tools or the instrument by which Hashem created the world. That's one explanation of this pasuk, Vayhi etzlei amoin. Another explanation, which is found in the Targum, the Aramaic translation of the pasuk, is that it comes from the word emunah, which means faith, or faithfulness and truth. And the Torah is proclaiming that I was the faithfulness and truth before him, before Hashem. Another explanation. The Medrash, and this is the commentary that Rashi bases himself on, says that it comes from the terminology of a mefarnes, of a sustainer or a trainer. The Medrash actually uses the, I believe, a Greek word, a pedagogue, meaning an educator, a trainer. But then there's a different explanation which I'd like to focus on, and that is the explanation of the Eben Ezra. The Eben Ezra takes this word amoin and relates it to another pasuk, a pasuk which we actually find in this week's parsha, Parshas Bahaloscha. Moshe Rabbeinu has a stiff-necked people to lead. He's given them the man, the most unbelievable food you could imagine. And what do? They complain. Right? It could taste like any flavor cheesecake you want. And it still wasn't good enough. So they complain to Moshe Rabbeinu. And they say that the man doesn't fill us up. We want meat. Right? Obviously it wasn't Shavuos. No one's saying we want meat on Shavuos. We want meat. That's what they said to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam, turns to Hashem in complaint. And he says as follows, Ha'anoichi harisi es ha'amazeh, did I conceive this people? Imanoichi litihu, did I give birth to them? Ki soimar elai sa'eu b'chekecha, did you tell me to carry them in your bosom? Kasha yisa ha'oimen es ha'yonek, just as a nursing, oimen is masculine, so here it means a nursing father, carries a suckling child. So Moshe Rabbeinu is complaining to Hashem, and he says to him as follows, that do I have to rear these people like babies? Are they my responsibility, like a mother and a father is responsible to the child? And Moshe uses the description of this sustaining and feeding and giving food to the Jewish people as kasher yisa ha'oimen es hayonek, just as an oimen, a nursing parent, nurses their suckling child. And if we look at this word oimen, it is connected, says Ibn Ezra, to this word vayhi etzloi amoy, that the Torah, in its most lofty of heights, at the very beginning of the pasuk in Mishlei, describes herself as that I was before Hashem as an amoin. It means either like a nursing parent or like a suckling child. We find this terminology of amoin elsewhere. If we look in the Megillah, when we talk about the relationship of Mordechai and Esther, the Megillah says, "Vayhi oimen es Hadassa," that he was the oimen to Hadassa. And if one looks at the Gemara explains exactly what this means. That Hadassah was an orphan. She didn't have any parents. Her mother passed away when she was a baby. And Mordechai had to look after a baby. And back in those days, they didn't have formula. What's Mordechai to do? So the Talmud tells us that a nes happened, a miracle happened, and that Mordechai grew breasts and was able to nurse Hadassah. Vayhi oimen. He was the oimen, the nurse to Hadassah. That's the Gemara. For more information, please reference there. So if we actually look and want to think about what is the ultimate of Torah, what is the highest, most lofty level, the way Torah is described, it is likened to nursing a baby. And nursing a baby with breast milk. Comment? Correct. We're going to come back to weaning in a moment. The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Nun Dalad, contrasts two parts of the same pasuk. And this pasuk describes when Shlomo HaMelech brought the Aron into the Beis HaMikdash, which he had built, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And we know that the Aron had two badim, had two poles, which the Aron was carried with. And these poles had to remain in the Aron itself. The other kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, the badim could be put in when you had to transport it. And when it was sitting in the Beis HaMikdash, they were taken out and they were left in storage. Although, if you look at the pictures, it doesn't show it that way, but it could have been. The Aron, on the other hand, lo yasurum imenu, that you cannot take out the badim, the poles, from the Aron. So the pasuk in Melachim says as follows, Vayarichu habadim, vayiru roshei habadim. That the badim were long, they were extended, and you could see the heads, the tops, the tips of the badim, the tops of these poles. Min ha-kodesh al-pnei hadvir, poking out at the curtain which separated between the kodesh hakadoshim and the kodesh. But then the pasuk says, v'lo yiru ha-chutza, but they were not seen on the outside. So the Gemara contrasts that we find, or we seem to see, a contradiction in this pasuk. On one hand, it says, Vayiru Rashi Habadim, that you could see the Rashi, the edges, the tops, the ends of the poles, you could see them. But the end of the pasuk says, Velo Yiru Hachutza, that you could not see them on the outside. Says the Gemara, there is no contradiction. HaKetzad. How can we explain the seeming contradiction? Very simple. Doichkin Uboltin Vayotin Beparoiches, that they were, imagine, you have the Aron in Kodesh HaKadoshim. And there is a machloikas where in Kodesh HaKadoshim it was. Was it on the far west side? From this Gemara, it seems that it was actually on the eastern side of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the two poles were doichin, they pushed into, ubaltin, they stuck out, v'yotzin, they protruded, beparoiches, into the curtain which separated the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And says the Gemara, v'nirin kishnei dadei ha'isha, it looked like the two breasts of a woman, the way they appear from underneath her shirt. Shenemar, as we find in the pasuk, Tzror hamur doidi li, my beloved to me is like fragrant, more fragrant spices. And the pasuk continues, Ben Shaddai Yalin, he will rest at my chest. And Rashi, in his commentary on that verse, says that this is a reference to Torah. Because what is the Aron? The Aron housed the Luchos. The Aron housed the Luchos which were given on Shavuos. The Aron contained within it the essence of the Torah given by Hashem to Jewish people. In fact, the Luchos themselves were the klal, were the general embodiment of the entirety of Torah. And of course, there was tremendous Kedusha of the Luchos themselves, they remained in Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, most people, aside from the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur, did not go into Kodesh HaKadoshim. They did not see the Arim. But yet, the Kohen who would go into the Kodesh, or at the times when they would open up the curtains and the Yisrael was able to see into the Kodesh, what would they see? How were they able to access? How were they able to receive from the Torah, from the Luchos, from the Arim, the shape of the Arim protruding into the curtain? Again, on the same idea of a nursing mother, was Kishnei Dadei Ha'isha. Whenever Torah brings a parable, whenever Torah brings a mashal, whenever Torah describes something, every detail, every nuance of that parable, of that mashal, must be exact. And therefore, if the Gemara in Yuma decides to describe the badim, the poles of the Arim protruding through the curtain, Kishnei Dadei Ha'isha, it is not just because that's how it appeared and how it looked. But there must be a deeper connection, because you could think of any two things, right? Two kids poking their heads through the mechitza looks the same. Why is this used as a description? Why is the euphemism one of Dadei Ha'isha? Because there is a deep connection between the Torah and the idea of a mother nursing her young child. So let's digress and talk a little bit about nursing. I don't know if I'm the most eligible person to do this, but if Mordechai could do it. The most rapid growth and development a child ever goes through is in the first 2 years of its life. If you kind of plot the graph of the rates of not only physical growth of all of the limbs of the child, but also the mental and cognitive development of the child and the skills that it is able to learn, it grows far more rapidly in these first couple of years than it will ever grow throughout the rest of its life. Scientifically, and again, I'm going to give a precursor over here that this is not a discussion about which is best, the bottle or the natural nursing of a mother, and that is left for one to do their own research and speak to their own advisors and counselors on that. I'm just going to bring you the statistics that I found over here. So let's talk scientifically. Scientifically, this growth that a child experiences, this tremendous growth and mental development that the child goes through in its most formative of days, months, and years, is fed and fueled by the nutrients which are found in its mother's milk. And yes, of course, formula tries to replicate that as best as possible, but of course, no scientist is as great as the Eibishter is. There are more than 200 known nutrients and beneficial elements which are found in a mother's milk. Just one example I came across, and I never heard of this before, but there's a fatty acid in a mother's milk which promotes growth of the brain and also the retina of the eye. There are antibodies to help fighting infection. If you actually look at the properties of a mother's milk, it's if you want to see niflois habore, you want to see the greatness of, forget birth, forget the development of a child, that itself is a wondrous thing. But just the nature and the balance of all of the nutrients and chemicals and ingredients that are found in a mother's milk, and the mother's milk changes according to the needs of a child. The milk that's produced, I need to talk to the side of the machitza because you probably know that already. The milk that's produced for a premature baby is of a different concentration and a different makeup than for a full-term baby. When a baby is sick, instinctively the body is able to change the composition of the milk to cater to the different needs of that child. It's quite a wondrous thing. I do have pictures of it. I won't show it to you, but it shows brain MRI scans done in a safe way by Brown University in the United States, which shows the speed of development of the brain core comparing nursed babies to non-nursed babies. But the point that I want to bring out, and which is relevant to our discussion tonight, is that a mother's milk, the nursing, the Dadei Ha'isha, promotes this powerful, rapid growth and development, not only to the body, physically for the baby, but also to its mind, its brain, and its development. Just as that is so in the physical sense, to the physical body of a child, The same is true with regards to a neshama. And we're going to discuss this over the course of the evening, that the neshama develops in stages. And there are different stages of the neshama. For example, we talk about the ibur of the neshama, the pregnancy, the gestation of the neshama. There is the leida, there is the birth of the neshama. There is the yenika, the nursing of the neshama. And then we have the weaning of the neshama. Now, what does this represent? Just as a child, a newborn infant, as its name suggests, is infantile, is small, undeveloped, its limbs are still small and need to grow, so too spiritually as well. If you look at a child is born with a very limited capacity of comprehension and understanding. Even their emotions, their feelings, they feel in full force. It's all joy, or it's all fear, or it's all angst. A child does not yet have the mind space to be able to regulate its emotions, at least in that youngest of years. So too with the neshama. When the neshama first is born, and when I say when the neshama is born, when the neshama comes down here into this world, and Tanya describes the process that the neshama goes through an ibur, it goes through a pregnancy, a gestation, where it goes down level after level after level through Seder Hishtalshlos until it comes, boom, out, just like a child coming out from the mother is now a separate being, so too this soul which once was part of the godly reality is now a separate being altogether, called a neshama beguf, a neshama in a body. And just like a child, its body is small, immature and undeveloped, so too the body of the soul, and I don't mean the physical body, I'm talking about the body of the soul, which we'll describe in a moment, is also undeveloped and it needs to grow. Just as the growth physically is facilitated and fueled by the milk of a nursing mother, so too spiritual nourishment, spiritual breast milk, which we're going to describe, is what feeds the neshama that its emotions and that its mind, its intellect can grow to come to a deeper appreciation of spirituality, of Kedusha, of Elokus, of godliness. So what is this super spiritual food? Another pasuk, Shir HaShirim in the Song of Songs, says as follows, Miyitencha ka'achli, who will make you to be like my brother? Yoinek shedei imi, to nurse from the breast of my mother. And of course, we know that Shir HaShirim is a song, a poem describing the love between Hashem and the Jewish people using the euphemism of a man and a woman, of a chassan and a kala. In Torah Or, a maimer from the Alter Rebbe, in Parshas Truma, the Alter Rebbe explains what this pasuk is talking about. It's talking about the Jewish people in the times of Golos. In the times of Golos, we know Elokus, godliness, is hidden, is concealed. We don't see Hashem's presence. Our yediyah, our recognition of godliness, is limited. And so the Jewish people cry out to Hashem with a bakasha, with a request, Mi'itencha ka'achli, who will make you to be like my brother? What does this refer to? The kruvim, which sat on top of the aron, were pneihem ish el achiv. Their faces faced one to the other, and it used the word achiv, like a brother. And of course, the kruvim represented the attachment and closeness and connection of Hashem and the Jewish people. So in the times of Golos, when godliness is no longer present and felt in a same way that it was in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people cry out to Hashem, Mi'itencha ka'ach, if only we will be able to have this relationship like the two kruvim, like achim. And then the pasuk continues, how do we achieve this? How is this connection, even in the times of Golos when the Beis HaMikdash destroyed, able to be forged? Yoinek mishtei imi, that is Torah. That through Torah, the badei ha'orein, the two poles of the orein which represent Torah, the nourishment, and not only the nourishment, but the closeness, using that muscle of an oimen, of a nursing mother and her child, is fed through the study of Torah. Because that is ultimately what the chalav, what the milk is as follows. There's an interesting Gemara, a Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud, which says as follows. It describes how David HaMelech said different parts of the Tehillim at different stages of his life. And one of those stages is as follows. That Yonak Mishtei Imoy, that when David was nursing from his mother, Nistakel B'dadeha, he looked towards her breast, Va'amar shira, and he sang a song of thanks to Hashem. Why was he thanking for Hashem? What was he thanks for? So it says in the pasuk, Barchi nafshi es Hashem, va'al tishkechi ko gemulav. That my soul will praise Hashem, and I will not forget all of his gemul. Now gemul usually means reward or repayment, but gemul like vayigamal is also the idea of weaning, the connection to nursing as well. So from here we see that David HaMelech sang a praise, a shir to Hashem, at the time when he was a nursing child. Now, what was his praise for? So the Gemara says as follows. He praised Hashem she'asala dadim b'mokim bina. Because Hashem placed the dadim, the breast from which a baby nurses, at the place of bina. At the place of bina. What is the place of bina? We say this every Friday night. Bina liba. Bina is connected to the heart. Now everyone's going to jump up and down and hang on one second. Bina is in the mind. It's chokma, bina, das, it's intellect. What's the connection to the heart? True. When we talk about the mind developing an emotional reaction or an emotional response, it is through bina. Eim habanim smecha. The process of bina, meditating, reflecting, pondering, thinking about something intently, is what spawns an emotional response in the heart. And when we talk about Hashem, the hisboinus, the thinking about the greatness of Hashem, elicits feelings of avas Hashem, love of Hashem, and yiras Hashem, fear of Hashem. And that's what it means that bina is found at the mokim, at the mokim bina is the heart, is the lev. Of course, bina is also connected to women who do the nursing, unlike Mordechai. Bina yesera nitna beisha. Women were given the extra measure of bina, as we've said before. Eim habanin smecha, the idea of a mother giving birth to children. Eim la bina tikra, the bina is called a mother. All of the allusions that we find over here. So if we now want to analyze what is the representation of the breasts of a woman, the source of the nursing, the source of that nutrients and nourishment, we're talking exactly about this point that it is bina, understanding, comprehension, the capacity and ability to appreciate and sense godliness with our mind. That is what feeds and nourishes and allows the neshama in its infancy, in its immature state, to grow. Now, what does it mean to grow? What is actually growing over here? So, let's have a look at a maimer from the Alter Rebbe, and this is found in Torah Ur, the Hoysafos in Parsha Shmois. Familiar with that? The Hoysafos in Parsha Shmois, where the Alter Rebbe actually goes on, and for those who are interested in nursing, you can look at there. It's a fantastic maimer, a good place to look. And he says as follows. When we talk about the body of a person, the body comprises the limbs. You have a right arm and a left arm, a body, a right leg and a left leg, the cup, a head as well. When we talk about the body of a neshama, we are referring to the midos, the emotions of the neshama. Again, like we say on Friday night in Pasach Eliyo, chesed droya yemina, that chesed is the right hand, gvura droya smala, gvura is the left hand, netzach and hoid, the emotions of ambition and submission are connected to the legs, and tiferes is of course connected to the torso as well. So when we talk about the limbs of the neshama, we are talking about the emotions. Now, emotions can exist in a very juvenile state, just like a child. When we talk about the neshamas in a juvenile state, they're in a state of katnus, in a state of smallness, and they need to grow. When we talk about the emotions in a juvenile state, we are not only talking about, as we'll soon see, the animalistic emotions, the emotions of the Nefesh Bahamas, but even the godly emotions which are supposed to fight and overpower the animalistic emotions are very small. They haven't yet been fueled and fed with this nourishing bina of Torah to be able to grow. So says the Tzemach Tzedek as follows, and the Alter Rebbe as well, that through chalav, which is bina, like David HaMelech says, b'moko in bina, in the place of the of bina, that the wisdom of Torah, which Torah is ultimately a yediyah and awareness and a comprehension and understanding of elokus, of godliness, that nourishes and feeds the emotions. Because when emotions are directed and are a response to our intellectual processing through reflection, through hispoinus, through meditation, however you want to call it, that grows and grows the emotions that the neshama has. And if you think about it for yourself for just one moment, the more you think about something that you love, the greater the emotional love you're going to experience. You think about a person that you love or a thing that you enjoy, if you want to go on the other side, something you dislike, the more you think about it, the more bina activity is happening, the bigger the emotion is going to grow. And when we talk about the emotions of the neshama, which are there to appreciate and sense and feel elokus, a love towards Hashem, an awe of Hashem, so the more we feed it with the bina of Torah, and Torah is the intellect, chachmasa shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that bina feeds like the nursing mother's milk and grows the emotions, that the emotions of the neshama grow forth to faratzta in all directions and they become much more powerful as well. That's the idea of nursing for the neshama. That after the neshama is born into this world, and it's just come boom into this world, a world where godliness is not seen and sensed, the neshama is like a fish out of water. The neshama needs to now develop a deep relationship from Hashem within the reality of being something separate from Hashem, like the child who is now no longer part of its mother. And in order to grow those emotions, to create that attachment, that closeness, that bonding with Hashem, like a child, a nursing child bonds and creates an attachment with the mother, it is through nursing. Nursing is the mokim habina, nursing at the badei ha'orein, the poles of the orein, protruding the idea of Torah study. So to understand all of this practically, and what does this have to do with cheesecake and Shavuos? Okay, of course, yes, Torah is matan, Torah is Shavuos, and Torah is like milk, and it's nourishing, etc. We need to understand where a mother's milk comes from. Now, what do I mean by that? How is it made? There's a Gemara in Bechoros, and it's found in Masechta Nida as well, and it brings a machloikas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. There's an interesting din, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that in the 24 months after a woman has a baby, we do not expect that her regular menstrual cycle is going to return. Why is that? So Rabbi Meir says very simply, dam ne'ekar v'nase chalav, that the blood, so to speak, spoils and is transformed into milk. What does that mean? I can't tell you. In fact, I actually did come across this idea. It's actually found lahavdil elef havdalos in Eastern medicine, where they also say that there is this change from dam to chalav as well. And Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi argue with Rabbi Meir and say that no, they say it's due to do with the traumatic experience of the body during labor, that it just doesn't get back to its regular self for 24 months. The Alter Rebbe actually brings this concept of dam nekar v'nase chalav. And again, I'm just going to translate it again. Dam nekar v'nase chalav is that the blood is transformed into the milk, into the nursing milk. The Alter Rebbe brings this in halacha, in halachas of Shabbos. Now, no one here is milking cows, I'm assuming. Anyone?
We have doctors here.
Hmm?
We have some doctors.
Okay. Again, so we'll talk about how this all medically stands up. We're going to talk about it medically in a moment. But milk that is milked from a cow on Shabbos or Yom Tov is awesome. You're not allowed to use it. You're not allowed to drink it. You're not allowed to bake with it, right? There's no such thing as freshly milked milk on Shavuos morning. Okay, still warm. The Alter Rebbe says as follows, that why is the milk asur? Because it's mukta. Why is it mukta? What category of mukta is? It is the category of noilad, something that did not exist before or existed in one completely different format before, and now came into being as something totally different on Shabbos and Yom Tov itself. Says the Alter Rebbe in the Shulchan Aruch, Simen Shin Hei, because dam nekar v'nase chalav. Because the blood of the animal is transformed into milk on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, the milk as a result is noilad, the milk as a result is going to be mukta and cannot be used. Now, the Gemara in Bechoros actually brings this as an interesting discussion. It's asking why Bechal are we allowed to drink milk? Milk should be treif. Okay, milk, that's actually one of the reasons we have milk on Shavuos. It's actually brought because if it wasn't for the Torah, we wouldn't be allowed to have milk because milk is eva minachai. It comes from a living animal. And if it wasn't for the Torah likening Eretz Yisrael to an Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, the Torah would never praise Eretz Yisrael with something which is asur. So we learn from the Torah that milk is allowed. But the Gemara in Bechoros says something different. If the milk was blood, well, blood is asur. Blood is asur. It's an isur kares to eat blood. And yet milk, is absolutely kosher. And that's a discussion that Gemara has over here. So if you look at the process of making milk, in Torah's eyes, dam, something which is absolutely asur and forbidden, becomes transformed into milk, something which is absolutely mutter. So as long as it's not happening on Shabbos or Yom Tov itself, well, no problem. Scientifically, well, I did a little bit of research into this. You know, you type blood and milk and, you know, it comes up a little bit of a discussion. But whilst I don't know about actually transforming blood into milk, but we know that the nutrients which are passed from mother to child through the breast milk comes from the body taking fats and proteins from the and sugars from the blood supply of the woman and converting that into the nursing milk. So you do have this idea of dam nekavanase chalav, something which was present as dam becomes transformed into chalav, into the milk which spiritually nourishes and physically nourishes a child. Let's talk about dam and chalav a little bit, milk and blood, and contrast them. So first of all, we've said that dam is something which is asur, the Torah forbids it to the nth degree, and chalav is something which the Torah is mechadesh, is mutter, is permissible. In Chassidus and Kabbalah, dam, blood, is connected to gevura. It's connected to the energies of gevurais, and that's one of the reasons dam is also to eat. Ki adam hu hanefesh. Dam, blood, represents the vitality of the physical chumriyistika body. And when we talk about an animal, it's talking about the life force and the veracity, the passion of a behemoth. So blood, as we find throughout Chassidus, represents the midos of the animalistic soul of the nefesh of Bahamas. And that's why it's something which is also. Chalav, on the other hand, red blood is connected to gevurois. Chalav, on the other hand, and there's a beautiful letter from the Rebbe's father to the Rebbe about the theme of chalav on Shavuos, is connected to chasadim. It's connected to chesed. It's white. Not only is it white, it's something which nourishes. It's something which gives. Like chesed is the idea of giving. Blood doesn't give. Chesed is something which is giving, something which is bestowing. It promotes growth and nourishment. And that's why the Torah is connected to chalav. Or chalav is used as an analogy for what Torah is. So when we talk about dam neka v'nase chalav, that blood is transformed to create milk in a spiritual process, it means the conversion of the raging passions of the nefesh ha-bahamas, of the animalistic soul, our desires for selfishness, our desires for indulgement in materialism and physicality, etc., and transforming that in a process of birur, a process of refining, just like the production of nursing milk, it takes the best of the nutrients from that blood and leaves the rest, and with that it builds the milk supply. It's the idea of sweetening the gevurais, the negativity of that dam, of the blood, and transforming it in a way of ishapcha, an absolute revolution where it's made over to become something which is now mutter, something which is kedusha, something which is chalav, something which is nourishing, something which is chesed. And how does this happen? Where does this happen? B'mokim bina, in the dadim, in the breasts of a woman, which we said refers to Torah. Torah is what causes our ability to transform the animalistic side of ourselves, the dam, so to speak, which are the midos of the nefesh abamas, to transform them into chalav, into something of kedusha. The Mittal Rebbe describes two ways that one can. It's a concept in Kabbalah. It's called hamtakas hadinim, sweetening the dinim, or sweetening the gevuros. There are two ways you can sweeten something. Well, one way is, an example the Mittal Rebbe gives, is if you have bitter water. You have water which is a very bad quality, it's bitter. Well, one way to sweeten it is you put enough good quality water in it, eventually the bitter water is going to be diluted till it's no longer noticeable. But did the bitter water actually change? No. It was overwhelmed, it was suppressed, it was negated, but it was not transformed. That's the idea of iskafia. That's the idea of pushing away the negative and trying to fill up as much good as possible, that the negative gets relegated and dissipates. But it's not transformed. The deeper level of dealing with negativity is one of ishapcha. It's where the gevura itself becomes transformed into chasadim. Dam nekar v'nase chalav. That the dam itself becomes chalav. And just parenthetically on the side, we can look at negativity that we suffer in our lives, and we all have it from time to time. We can look at it in one of these two ways. How do we deal with it? Well, one way is either we try and just sweeten our lives with other enjoyable things and try and numb our minds and to forget about the tzaras and the things which are bothering us. That's like the first way. Or we can take the approach of dam nek of anaseh chalav, that we try and find the good within the negative situation and transform it entirely, like the negative becomes good. Gamzul toiva. So, let's bring it back to our discussion of Shavuos. We spoke about the development of a neshama, that the neshama is born, means it comes down into this world, and then it needs to go through this development process. This development process in Kabbalah is connected to the three regalim, the three yamim tovim of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Bear with me. Shemini Atzeres is referred to as the zivug, the uniting of Hashem and Knesset Yisrael. We know Shemini Atzeres, which is the culmination of Tishrei, right? It's the most lofty of all of the days of the month of Tishrei. It's a day where Hashem and the Jewish people are alone. The korban on Shemini Atzeres is only one animal representing Hashem's unique relationship with the Jewish people. And the Mekubalim tell us that in that moment, there is a zivug, there is a union which is created, like the union between a husband and a wife, a union which brings about a conception of a neshama, of neshamois. So the conception of the neshama happens on Shemini Atzeres. The ibur, the gestation, then goes for the next few months. And the later, the birth of the neshamas happens on Shvi'i Shel Pesach. The seventh night of Pesach is the birth of these neshamas, which were conceived lamaila on Shemini Atzeres. Now, where do we see this? Shvi'i Shel Pesach was Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea. Now, the splitting of the sea is like the parting of the waters, the rupturing of the waters which encase a baby. And then the passing of Bnei Yisrael through the Yamsuf is like the passing of a child from being in a state of pregnancy to coming out into the world. Like a fetus that beforehand was in the womb, and now it comes out and it emerges. So that is the Leda, the birth of the Neshama, going out of the godly reality, because in that Ibur, just like the child in its mother, is still part of the godly reality, the soul is still part of Elokus, it's not something separate and distinct. But on Shvi'i Shel Pesach, the Neshama is born, it comes out into the world, it becomes separate from Elokus, separate from godliness, like a newborn baby. And at that state, as a newborn baby, it is small, its limbs are undeveloped, are immature. And when we talk about, of course, the neshama, again, we are talking about its emotions and its ability to emotionally sense and appreciate godliness. It's juvenile, it's infantile, it doesn't have a relationship with Hashem in this new experience of a neshama down here in this world. And therefore, the midos of the nefesh of Bahamas, the dam is what is present. The dam, that passion and blood, like we see a child lives instinctively, I want this and I want that, all about indulging and engaging in its physical needs and desires, which for a child is not necessarily a negative thing. Then begins the process, like a child, of yenika, of nursing. So let's digress again. We found ourselves now in Sfira So'imer, and we're going to tie it all up in the end, I promise. Sviras HaOmer, the counting of the Omer, began with the bringing of a korban in the Beis HaMikdash, the korban Omer. The korban Omer, unlike other grain offerings in the Beis HaMikdash, came from barley. And the Gemara tells us about the Soita, and Chassidus tells us that is barley is a meichel behemah, it's an animalistic food. And therefore it's connected to the animalistic soul, the nefesh Bahamas, the emotions of the animal soul. Sviras HaOmer is a time where we are actively engaging to try and refine the midos of our nefesh HaBahamas, the emotions of our animal soul. Each night, a different midah, chesed sheba chesed, gvura sheba chesed, all the way until malchus sheba malchus, to try and refine the dam, that passionate emotions of the animal soul, and to transform it into something holy. How do we do that? So the days of Sfiras HaOmer, the 49 days of Sfiras HaOmer, we are mamshich, we draw down from the 49 Sharei Bina, 49 gates of Bina. Bina is Mokim Bina. Bina is the Dadei Aisha. Bina represents understanding of godliness the way it is found in Torah. That through Torah, through Hisboinus, we draw down a godly light into ourselves to transform the animalistic midos, the animalistic natures and tendencies of our animal side. Damnekar v'nase chalav, that it should become chalav, it should become something holy, something nourishing, something spiritual. When that is done, and in fact that's the whole reason really the neshama comes down into the world. We have an interesting medrash. The medrash says in the pasuk that Hashem saw v'ine toiv ma'oid, toiv zem yetzer, toiv, the toiv refers to yetzer toiv, yeah, the yetzer toiv is toiv. Toiv ma'oid ze yetzer hara. Toiv ma'oid is the yetzer hara. What does that mean? That when you transform the yetzer hara into something good, it excels in goodness even greater than the yetzer toiv itself does. Because the yetzer toiv is implicitly good. The yetzer hara is a transformation of dam nekar v'nase chalav, taking blood, taking passion, which is animalistic, and seeking physical desires, transform that into a desire and a yearning for godliness. Well, you see that the strength of an animal is far greater than the strength of a human being. And so too, the midos, the emotions of the animal, that blood, that raging, boiling passion, when converted into chalav, become something which is so powerful, something so nourishing, just like we find with the growth and development of a child. So now let's go back to this idea. The birth of the neshama is when? Shvi'isha Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach. The seventh day of Pesach until the end of Sfiras HaOmer, which is this process of transforming the animal emotions into godly emotions, dam into chalav, is how many days? From the seventh day of Pesach till the end of Sfira? 44. 44 nights of Sfira. What's the gematria of 44? Dam. Dam. That there are 44 days of dam, of animalistic passions of the newborn soul with its animalistic inclination that need to be transformed through this process of dam nekar v'nase chalav, drawing down through bina, drawing down through the wisdom of Torah to refine and work on ourselves and elevate ourselves. And that is becomes transformed into chalav until you reach the final day of Sfiras HaOmer, which is just before Matan Torah. Each day, like the growth of a child, the child grows more and more and more, but it's fed from that process of dam nekar v'nase chalav. What about the first 5 days? Okay. First 5 days of Sfiras HaOmer, from the first day until the seventh day. I'm not going to go into it, but I just want to bring out one point. That is, if we take our analogy before the baby is born. Now, I'm told that a mother begins developing milk before the baby is born as well. Right? But at that point, it's not actually serving any function. It's a preparation. And so to the first 5 days, which are all within chesed. Remember we spoke about dam being gevura? So these are all within chesed. Chesed sheb chesed, gevura sheb chesed, tiferet sheb chesed, netzach sheb chesed, and hoyd sheb chesed, the first 5 days. These are like the koyach and the ability that the body then has, or that spiritually then have, once that child is born, to refine the dam of the remaining 44 days of Sfiras HaOmer. If you have any more questions on that, we'll talk about it after the end of the shiur. Okay, we got through that. Okay, so comes the end of Sfiras HaOmer, and sorry to break it to you, but whilst you might be thinking, if I would ask you now, why do we have milchiks on Shavuos? You'd think, well, yeah, nursing, right? Shavuos is actually the weaning of the baby. Because if you think about it, the 44 days remaining of Sfiras HaOmer is the dam nekar v'nase chalav, is the nourishing of the mother's milk, where the blood is transformed into milk, which the idea of transformation of the animalistic emotions into something godly, into something holy, something pure, and something nourishing. When it comes to day number 49, the child has grown as big as it can get from its mother. And now it's time for the child to move on to that next stage. The child weans. Yep. What was that? Weaning is when you finish nursing. The child finishes nursing and no more nursing from its mother, and now moves on to a new experience of solids. Thank you. The Gemara tells us, and Chassidus brings this all the time, Ein hatinuk yodea likrois Abba ache yitoim tam dagan. A child cannot call its mother, its father or mother, until it has tasted grain. What does that mean? Until now, we've been speaking emotionally. We've been speaking about the emotional development and the maturation of the soul. We haven't yet spoken about the intellectual appreciation of the soul. The intellectual appreciation of the soul is like the child who is now able not just to feel its mother or father, but to recognize Tati, Mommy, and actually say father or mother. When does that happen? Achiyitoim tam dagan. All of the nursing is a hachan, it's a preparation. It builds that child to the, as far as it can go. Its body is growing and growing. The emotions of the neshama have grown and grown till they can now sense and feel a closeness to Hashem, an avas Hashem and a yiras Hashem. The weaning, once that is achieved, you now move on to eat grain. Grain is the dagon no longer of bina but of chachma. And that is connected to Shavuos. And that's why the korban on Shavuos was the shtei halechem, which was of chita, of wheat. The tam dagon. And chita is the gematria chaf beis, the 22 letters of Torah, the 22 letters of the Torah in its source state, which is the idea of chachma. So, if so, why do we eat milchiks on Shavuos? We should have milchiks on Erev Shavuos, right? That's why we're having milchiks tonight, because we're still in the middle of Sfiras HaOmer. Okay, so we've got one more piece to fit into the puzzle, and I don't know if we'll get there tonight. Let's bring it all back to our discussion. Eating milchiks on Shavuos, we said, is an extremely powerful minig. And there are many, many reasons given for it. And the reason that I've put forward tonight in our discussion here is that Shavuos celebrates Matan Torah. Shavuos is the giving of the Torah. And the giving of the Torah is not just that, wow, we have this wonderful book that we can study and we can engage in. The Torah is a tool. The Torah is a tool for development and growth in the most unparalleled ways. Just like a child grows and develops from its mother's milk more than it will ever grow in its life. The growth of the emotions, the growth of the body, the chesed, the gvura, tiferes, netzach, hoyd, yesoid, and malchus, the idea of transforming dam into chalav, to be able to take the animalistic side of ourselves, to take our yetzar, to take our weaknesses, to take our taivas, to overcome them, and not just to push them away and relegate them to the corner, but to actually to transform the dam neck of a nasa chalav, that we can transform the animalistic side of ourselves to becoming a vehicle for godliness, a connection to Hashem. That tool is the bina. That tool is the mokoim bina of the Dadei HaIsha. That is the Badei HaOrein, which stuck out into the Parochas. That is Torah. Torah gives us that capacity, that ability. So when we talk about Vayihi Etzloi Amoin, that it was an Amoin by Hashem, that the Torah in its ultimate state, the Torah in its ultimate state is that it comes down into Shashua B'nei Adam, into our reality down here as an Adam, as a neshama born into the world outside of the godly reality to transform the negativity of our lives, of our being, of our Nefesh HaBahamas into a vehicle for holiness. And this is why, if you look in the Gemara, when Moshe Rabbeinu was up in Shemayim, and he has to debate the Malachim, the angels, as to why the Torah should be given down to the earth, one of the accusations that Moshe puts forward to the Malachi Ashares is Klum Yetzahara Yesh Beinechem. Do you guys have a Yetzer Hara? And they said, no. Well, if you were to think about it, well, I'd rather give my Torah to someone who doesn't have a Yetzer Hara. Right? They're going to keep it. Someone has a Yetzer Hara, they're going to struggle, they may keep it, they won't, they'll lapse, they'll fall. Why would you give the Torah to a person who has a Yetzer Hara? Yet Moshe uses this logic to say, Dafka, the Torah should be given to the Yidden down in the world, a neshama in a guf, a neshama in a body with a nefesh abahamas, with a Yetzer Hara, because that is ultimately where the purpose of Torah is actualized. The neshamas up above, there's no dam. It's all good, it's all wonderful, it's all holy. The purpose of Torah is to come down into the dam, into the Nefesh HaBahamas, into a Yetzer Hara, into a physical world with all of our desires and all of our shortcomings as human beings with a Yetzer Hara, and dam nekar v'nase chalav, gives us the tool to transform that dam into chalav, to transform those gevuros, that raging passion of our animalistic side, to become something holy, to become something nourishing, and to become something beautiful. And who is the yoinek? Who is the one who nurses us with this nourishing milk of Torah? That is, of course, the Eibishter. And when we talk about a young child nursing from his mother, It is so much more than just the physical nutrients to grow. It is not just about nourishing and giving the vitamins to grow and to develop. There's an attachment that is created through that experience. There's a closeness which no bottle can replicate as a mother nurses a child, an attachment and a bonding, and like it uses the Lashon, shashuim, a pleasure, a delight. The child has a tainug and a geshmak and just a pleasure of this experience. And so too it is with Torah. Not only does Torah, the chalav, lahagid baboker chazdecha, the chalav which is from the makom bina, from the dadi aisha, the badim of the orem, not only does it give us the ability to grow our animal soul, to develop it and transform it from dam into chalav, but it also gives us pashut, a geshmaka experience of closeness and bonding, developing a relationship with Hashem. So we should all taka be zoicha to be mekabel the Torah with simcha, besimcha uve pnimius, and of course to have chalav, not only to have chalav, to have chita, to have wheat as well, but the ikar is to internalize the message of what this represents, to take that wonderful nourishing substance, that white substance of Torah that Hashem gives us, and to use it to better our lives, to take one dumb aspect of our lives, and that it should be nek of anase chalav, that it should only be chesed and only goodness.